starting quarterback in Week 16, replacing Jameis Winston. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones says they've never discussed the topic of trading edge rusher Micah Parsons, making the comments earlier today on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. NFL flex scheduling as the Falcons and Commanders moving to Sunday night, December 29th.
Fox Sports update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, and new daily specials, and check out the great new golf shop. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, this is your agribusiness update. U.S. beef and pork exports posted year-over-year increases in October, according to USDA data compiled by the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Beef exports in October totaled over 105,000 metric tons, up 1% from last year, while value jumped 3%. Pork exports were over 252,000 metric tons, up 3%, while value also rose 3%. For the year, though, pork exports are projected to pass the 3 million metric tons for the first time. The food price index averaged 127.5 points in November, up half a percentage point from the October level and its highest value since April of 23. The increase was driven by higher price quotes for dairy products and vegetable oil, which slightly outweighed declines in meat, cereals, and sugar indexes. The index was 5.7% higher than its corresponding value in November of 23. The number is also 21% below its peak of 160.2 points in March of 22. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed listing the monarch butterfly as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. National Corn Growers Association President Kent Hartman Jr. says they look forward to providing input on protecting monarch butterflies without disrupting critical agriculture activities that help feed and fuel the world. Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall says preserving natural surroundings for America's wildlife has long been a priority for America's farmers and ranchers.
For the last 40 years, the Ag Information Network has been the source of news for farmers and ranchers. Yet we have never seen such an assault on farming and our food supply as we do today. From fuel to fertilizer, farmers are facing unprecedented economic challenges. This is why agriculture news that farmers receive comes from the Ag Information Network, reaching coast to coast. Deep roots in farming and decades of reporting, the Ag Information Network, trusted and transparent journalism for generations. For over 40 years, the Ag Information Network has been providing news and information for the most important industry in the world, agriculture. The Ag Information Network gives you worldwide updates from local producers to regional organizations, from major crops like wheat and corn, to animal agriculture, to specialty crops like apples, almonds, and cherries. We report on stories that mean the most to you. Online at aginfo.net, the Ag Information Network, trusted and transparent journalism lasting for the next generation.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Neil Cavuto, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks are lower in afternoon trading, with the Dow on track for its ninth straight session of losses for its longest losing streak in 50-plus years. And consumers stepped up their spending at retail stores last month, providing a boost to the economy and showing that the holiday shopping season is getting off to a strong start, with retail sales rising 0.7% in November from the previous month. The boost in spending shows that the economy is still growing at a healthy clip, even with higher interest rates. Today's retail sales report arrives just a day before the Fed is slated to announce its latest rate decision. Home builder confidence was flat in December from the previous month amid uncertainty over how quickly mortgage rates will decline. The National Association of Home Builders Index remained at 46 in December. Any reading under 50 indicates more builders view conditions as poor rather than good. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
On the last broadcast, I suggested that labor leaders were conducting a kind of class warfare using some very questionable economic theory. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by Mills Construction for architectural metal roofing and siding. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
On my last commentary, I criticized the AFL-CIO California Convention for adopting some resolutions which were actually hurtful to the men and women they represent. I spoke specifically on the false idea that business can be made to pay a larger share of the tax burden, thus relieving individuals. The truth, of course, is that business taxes are part of the cost of operation and must be paid by the customer in the increased price of the product. But the labor leaders in that California convention made other decisions equally harmful to their rank-and-file members. For example, they raised the old cry born of demagoguery that income taxes should be more progressive, making those with higher earnings pay a bigger share of the tax. Well, right now, at less than $10,000 a year, and I don't think many union members earn less, you are in the top 50% of income earners in the United States, and you pay 94% of the total income tax. At a little over $20,000, you're in the top 10%, and that 10% pays half the total tax. And if you're talking of the one-half of 1% who earn $50,000 a year and up, go ahead, raise their tax to 100%, take every dollar they earn, and it will run the government for less than 3 days. The delegates to that California AFL-CIO convention, I'm sure, were well-intentioned, but they made it clear they did not want a cut in government spending. They want more tax revenues to pay for that spending, and they don't seem to realize the only source of additional revenue is the great working middle class, which includes their own members, and which works now almost 5 months a year to pay for the cost of government. Finally, the other proposal the convention made was to gain more revenue from the capital gains tax. The delegates echoed the president's ill-considered charge that a reduced capital gains tax constituted a windfall for millionaires. Frankly speaking, the president was a little off base. It's hard to get great numbers of people excited about the capital gains tax. Very simply, it's the tax one pays upon selling for a profit something one owns. It is true, it affects mostly those who have savings to invest in stocks, land, or some other object. It is also true that capital investment is what fuels our industry and creates jobs. Our competitors in world trade, such as Japan and West Germany, even socialist England, have no tax on long-term capital gains. But it isn't true to say it affects only people of wealth. Half of all those reporting capital gains have adjusted gross incomes below $15,000. And more than half of the total amount of capital gains is reported by people with incomes below $25,000. In 1969, we virtually doubled the capital gains tax. In 1970, there were 31 million investors putting up the capital to increase production and create jobs. Today, there are fewer than 25 million. I wish today's labor leaders had the statesmanship of the American Federation of Labor Leaders in 1942, who demanded that the capital gains tax be reduced, if not eliminated, because it was preventing the investment of capital needed to create jobs for their members. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by Mills Construction, specializing in pre-engineered metal buildings. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday and it's 12:30, time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. We have a really great group of guests on today from 12:30 to 1. Henry Rogers, the chief national correspondent for the Daily Caller, is on the line. Henry, welcome back to Protecting What Matters.
Hey, Barry, thanks so much for having me. Well, I always appreciate it.
Thanks for taking the time. We're going to be talking to Henry about what's going on in Washington, D.C., cabinet nominations, DOGE, Congress, and President-elect Trump, of course. And then also in studio, I have Jay Leach, Kaylin Clark, and Jake Frederick, my Protecting What Matters multi-generational panel. Welcome back, you guys.
Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right. We're going to be talking with these guys throughout the show about the Daniel Penny Luigi Mangione story, the whole notion that victimhood seems to have been flipped on its head, and what about what's going on in the culture, our leadership, and financial changes in America and a fractious world. So call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Henry, it's been a wild and woolly, I guess what, now 6 weeks since the election. You've been in the thick of it. And I guess the first question I want to ask you was, what was one or two aspects of the whole victory by President Trump that stands out to you the most?
I would say, it's a tough question, there's a lot there, but I would say the two top things that stand out to me would probably be the lawfare that was, you know, put against him throughout his entire campaign that he had to deal with, all these court dates throughout different states, jurisdictions. He fought those fights, rightfully so, and now they're all being tossed to the curb. They tried to end that man's career, throw him in jail. I remember going to jail with him, going to get his mugshot in Atlanta. That was a surreal experience, but, you know, I think if you overcome that, you can really overcome anything. The other thing is probably the realignment that I've been seeing since he's been elected, just the amount of people who you would never expect to be even talking to Trump or mentioning his name in a positive light are doing just that. You have world leaders coming from all across the world to go visit Mar-a-Lago, to come sit down with Trump, to talk about how they can actually work together. I think it's a lot different than what you saw in 2016. So I think those are the two things that stand out the most to me right now.
What was your take on the change in the demographics of the whole voting population shifting towards Trump in a big way from young men? You know, we were talking about that before the show with the guys here, but, you know, through the manosphere, we're going to be talking about the manosphere later in the show, but I mean, you know, was that Trump's idea? Or was there somebody in the campaign that really, I know Barron Trump was very, very instrumental in the whole manosphere thing. But I mean, how did that all come together from your perspective? Did they appeal to all those various different groups and be able to get really record turnout and vote turnout from groups that didn't typically vote Republican?
Right, and that's another massive part of it all. I would say that Barron was the biggest pusher on his father with, you know, these guys who can connect with the millennial generation, the Gen X, you know, Gen Z generation, the podcast community. That was all Barron, Trump, and one of my good friends, Alex Brusewitz, who works for the Trump campaign, he was a big leader in connecting the campaign with these podcasters and people who the younger generation look up to and like. That was a huge, huge aspect of it. Before, they weren't doing that at all. They weren't reaching out to that generation. But I think that, I mean, if you look at the numbers, it's historic. And what he did was he got, you know, all these people in that age group who used to not like him or who had heard terrible things about him or read or heard in the news, you know, nasty things about him. And he completely turned that around and now everyone loves him. it's incredible to see, but they'll sit, you know, they sat down a lot of these guys for, you know, 2-3 hours and just had normal conversations, something that Kamala Harris refused to do. And I think she definitely regrets that now. But, you know, even if she did have those sit-down conversations, I can tell you, have met them both, it wouldn't have gone her way like it had gone for Trump. Trump is just good with people. He's great with people who, no matter who it is, he's good with them. And when you sit him down with, you know, no matter what podcaster I name, you sit him down with them, it's going to turn out well for him. So I think that was a massive play for them.
Henry, question on the assassination attempt. Like, how did that impact it from your view?
I would say that was probably the biggest change. I think when people saw that, I mean, you saw even Mark Zuckerberg the other day. I referred to it as, you know, badass or whatever he said. He was, you know, he's right. He was like, that was a defining moment to me. I was there. He wasn't there, but yeah, he said, I was watching the news, and, you know, to see the president get shot in the face, go down, come back up, and pump his fist with the American flag waving behind you, that shows a fighter. That shows someone who cares about this country. It's not, you know, it's a lot more than just wanting to be president again. It shows someone who actually deeply cares about this country. So I think that was probably the defining moment of the campaign, was when he got shot. I remember where I was, and I'm sure everyone does remember where they were that day. And I think that, you know, when you watch that moment, you're like, okay, this guy's a fighter. He's going to fight for me. He's going to fight for our country. He's going to give it our all. He doesn't care if he gets shot in the face. So I think that was huge.
Yeah, you know, and again, I agree with you. This whole spectacle of the tech giants and world leaders showing up at Mar-a-Lago, or Trump going to Europe. I mean, he's already president as far as most of the world is concerned. So let's shift gears here a little bit. I know you've been covering the cabinet picks extensively. I mean, I guess the folks that are getting most attention are Hegseth, Gabbard, Bondi, RFK, Jay, and Patel. What's the inside scoop on how they're going to do?
I think the news is making, and they're planting a lot of fake stories out there to kind of make it seem like it's going tougher than it really is. From my conversations with senators, including today, I've had a lot of conversations with at least four or five Republican senators. A lot of these nominations seem to be going actually fairly smoothly. Kash Patel was supposed to be one of the most, you know, divisive, hard confirmations that they were dealing with, but it seems like it's been the smoothest. Everyone forgets that he's a Hill rat. He's been on the Hill for a while. He knows his stuff. He's actually a very intelligent guy. He's not just some guy who has no idea what he's talking about. But he's been working with these people for around 3 years, actually. Not just eyeing the FBI job, but he's been giving them advice and guiding these senators, and they all appreciate that. I think, you know, looking at it now, they're trying to go after Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., for some of his comments about vaccines, and they're trying to go after Tulsi Gabbard for some of her conspiracy comments and all of these different things. But what I'm noticing for the most part is the Republican Party is united on Trump's picks for the most part. I think there will probably be 2 to 6 who are going to be on the fence, and that's concerning. But I think, you know, Trump was asked about this yesterday when I was down at Mar-a-Lago for his press conference. Does he think that they'll be primaried if they don't vote for his candidates? And his answer was, I think, the absolutely right answer, which was, I will listen to their concerns and I will hear them out. I don't have any, you know, I don't personally want to go primary them. But what I found funny, typical Trump fashion, he said, but somebody will primary them for me, you know. Right. So it's just, I think it's totally fair. We have to remember that Joe Biden's cabinet nominees, they faced zero opposition from Democrats. So, and they those were some of the worst picks in American history that was on his cabinet. So I would say, Republicans really need to stay united here. And the ones who don't, if they decide to venture off for some weird reason, to go get a book deal or get an NBC News contract or CNN contract, they should be primaried, and they should figure out what's going to happen to them if they try to oppose these cabinet secretaries. There's no real dirt on any of them. It's all just hearsay and nonsense. So, trust me, there was a lot of vetting that went on before this. And if this is all they got is, you know, unnamed sources and all that crap, being pushed by, you know, CNN and the typical MSN outlets, then, I mean, I see them all making it through, honestly.
Well, the biggest problem, of course, for the Republican Party is that they love the circular firing squad. And I see something up on Fox News right now that some of the GOP yep. rebels in Congress are starting to create a problem for Speaker Johnson already on this government shutdown issue. And yep. again, they're their own worst enemies. I mean, you got to get what you can get when you can get it, and then move on and to the next step. So what's this?
Well, I mean, Barry, yeah, I'm sorry, you and I have talked about you and I have talked about this before. It's like the Democrats are just so good at being united. They're just great at it. And then the Republicans love to fight each other. And right. it's one of the biggest problems the party has. The Republican Party needs to stay united, like the Democrats do. If they did, it'd be game over.
So let me ask you a quick question, because, you know, what's the deal with Pelosi and McConnell? These two can hardly even stand up anymore. You know, what yeah. continue? Why do they continue to? Well, I know why they continue to cling to power. How is it that anybody lets them continue to cling to power? What is it? Is it the money? Is it their connections? What's the deal with these two?
It's the money. It's the fundraising. They're both really, really good at fundraising, raising money for their parties, or at least the people that they want to raise money for. I don't know if you remember, but, you know, like Ted Cruz completely got screwed in his race, which was actually way closer than it should have been. But McConnell didn't like him, so he didn't give him any of his money, you know. So that's just kind of how McConnell operates. Same thing with Nancy Pelosi, she's a great fundraiser. But both of them, I mean, both of them are really not doing well health-wise, right. as you know. And it's very concerning. And that's why I've always been pushing for term limits and age limits and all these things, because I don't believe that these people should be running anything. I mean, it's concerning. If you can't even walk down the stairs, how can you run this country or you know, be a leader of the House or the Senate? It's absolutely insane to me. But I will say, I mean, Nancy Pelosi is still being successful. She was pushing for Jerry Connolly to run the House Oversight Committee for the Democrats, and he ended up winning today mm-hmm. instead of AOC. She was running a hard campaign against progressive AOC, pushing people, telling people, like, do not vote for her, whatever you do. And it ended up working. So she still has, despite her injuries or whatever's going on with her life, her age, her husband, despite it all, she still somehow has the power to convince a lot of people yeah, nope. to do what she wants.
So who do you see emerging on the Democrat side to kind of replace her and take charge? Is the party going to continue to veer left, or do you think it's going to move a little more to the center?
Well, it's a great question, because everyone I know and the younger people who are Democrats, they want to see that progressive side pick up. Like they're into the AOC and whoever has the most TikTok followers or whatever. They don't really care about, they don't really know what's happening, or they're not in touch with reality. But, you know, if they were smart, I think they would go down the more moderate route. I think you saw Kamala Harris go a little too far left at certain times throughout her career, and that's what it got her during this election cycle. I think Joe Biden probably won the presidency because, quote, he was a quote-unquote moderate at the time. I don't believe he was, but people do. So, you know, I think if they were smart, they would go down the more moderate route. But it seems to me like the younger generation, a lot of these people in college and who are turning out tons of votes, it seems like they want people further left. They want the Green New Deal. They care about climate change so much that they want to destroy our country over it. They don't know what it is, but they want to pretend they do. So I don't know. It's a great question. I know Hakeem Jeffries has been floated for a very long time as a possible replacement for Nancy Pelosi. I would say that's just as bad, if not worse. But I mean, either way, who knows what the Democrats are going to do. I think they're trying to find that out themselves.
Well, I love the way Congressman Comer was trolling AOC, trying to encourage her to get that position, because he would have rather have had to deal with her than a more centrist Democrat, I'm thinking, on that.
Oh, it would have been great. And I have a great relationship with James Comer and his team, and it would have been awesome to watch them just go back and forth. But at the same time, would it be good for our country? No, because they have that's one of the most important committees in Congress.
Right.
They need to be doing their jobs. And, you know, if AOC was the leader of that committee, I can only imagine how that would have played out. So would it have been funny? Absolutely. Would it have been good for our country? No, definitely not.
So in the last couple of minutes we have in this segment, tell us a little bit about your impression of Elon Musk, the whole Doge thing, and how you see that working in conjunction with Congress to really get some more government efficiency. Do you think this is going to be successful?
I hope so. I mean, I think it's needed. I think it's something that's been needed for a very long time. Everyone's always talking about, you know, cutting spending and getting rid of debt and, you know, all these things, but it's never really happened. I mean, there are so many bureaucrats and government employees and people who are being paid large six-figure salary jobs who are doing nothing, like completely doing nothing. They have cool titles, but it's a waste of our money. It's a waste of taxpayer dollars. So I think it's a great idea. I'm very skeptical on how it's going to be done, the way, you know, like, are they going to have a official office building? Like, how is it all going to work out? I don't really know the answers to all that yet. I know they're building a really great team, and I like that. I like Vivek. I like Elon. I hope it's successful. It's much needed. I just don't know exactly how it's going to work. I think they'll be working closely with the OMB, the Office of Management. I just think that they'll be very close with them and Russ Scott and a lot of other people in the government on trying to eliminate jobs and costs that are, you know, not needed. And we're talking about, like, billions and billions and billions of dollars, so.
To trillions, really. Have you had much interaction with Elon? I mean, he looks like a really fascinating but quirky guy to kind of be hanging out with. I mean, any impressions that you would like to share?
No, I will say I was having lunch with Mayor Rudy Giuliani down in Palm Beach yesterday after Trump's presser. It was me, him, and a friend, and he was just talking about his, you know, kind of his quirkiness and the way that he's been at Mar-a-Lago pretty much every day since Trump's won, and he really has an influence on the transition process that's going on. I think that's great. I think it's great what he's doing. I appreciate it. I've personally never met him, but I've heard great things about him. I think he's an interesting guy, and I think if you look at his businesses and how that's all played out, it's been a great success. If he decides to run the government or help run the government like he has his businesses, I think it's going to be a great success. So I hope nothing but the best for him. I hope he doesn't get, you know, too involved necessarily, but keeps doing some outside work to make sure the right people are inside the government. Well, so overall, I'm happy with it, but your read is correct. He's definitely an interesting guy, to say the least.
Yeah, and one of the things, I got the bumper music coming up, but I think that one of the things that he did was the most important towards the election was making sure we really had the freedom of speech with X and all Absolutely. That stuff. That was his number one contribution, and the money that he contributed as well. Okay, Henry, stay on the line. I'm going to put you on hold for about 2 minutes, and we'll be back to wrap up your segment. So stand by. Folks, we'll be right back.
Was very pleased with not only the repair done by Davis Body Shop, but also their professionalism. Jason was courteous and explained the work to be done in clear terms. I was sent regular texts to keep me up to date on the progress of the repairs, and the job was finished in the time schedule he'd estimated. I would recommend Davis for any auto body work that needs to be done.
Nobody says it better than Ann from Paso Robles when she tells her story about her experience at Davis Body Shop. We've been telling you for over 50 years about Davis Body Shop, why we're the longest established auto body repair shop on the Central Coast, offering a lifetime warranty on repairs. Discover the Davis difference at Davis Body Shop, El Camino Real, Atascadero, or on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet. Online, davisbodyshop.com.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We moved from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. I'm in studio with the PWM multi-generational panel, and we're visiting with Henry Rogers, Chief National Correspondent for the Daily Caller. If you have any questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So in the last couple minutes here, Henry, let's a couple of things. What are you watching out for? What are you looking at over the next 34 days, which is how many days we have to President Trump? What kind of things should we be watching out for?
Well, I will be watching out, like we were just talking about, I will be watching out for these Senate Republicans and how they're going to deal with these nominees. I think that's going to be a massive thing. You know, if you have two people, if Collins and Murkowski flip and you get another guy, that's a big problem for Republicans and a big problem for Trump. So that's one thing I'll be looking at. I'm also just curious about, like, you know, Trump's first 100 days, you know, or even first 30 days. What is he going to do? How fast are they going to start moving on things? I'm also curious about Republicans overall. They are going to be in control, as you know, of the House, Senate, and they'll have the White House. You know, how fast before they start holding people accountable, holding hearings, making moves on what they've been promising for the last 4 years? A lot of what happens, what I've noticed over, you know, covering politics for a decade is, you know, they'll introduce crazy legislation to hold people accountable or hold hearings and do all this stuff, but nothing ever comes of it. So what I plan on doing this year is reaching out to all those people who have given me exclusive stories or, you know, whatever on a variety of topics and saying, hey, are you going to actually follow through with this now that you have the votes in the House and the Senate and the White House? Are you going to actually follow through, or was this a publicity stunt this entire time? So that's kind of something I'm focused on. I'm also focused on, you know, all these big tech guys who have been coming down. We have Mark Zuckerberg giving $1 million to the re-election transition campaign. You have the CEO of Amazon, the CEO of OpenAI. I know that the CEO of TikTok was at Mar-a-Lago last night for dinner. What's going to happen? Are all of these guys going to actually end up working together, joining teams, and like, you know, deciding that America First agenda is going to be the best way to move forward? That's kind of what I'm worrying about, and I'm hoping that happens. But, you know, what I do know for sure, and I think that Trump, he has this down way better than he did the first time. He's walking in, he knows people in D.C., he knows these politicians a lot better, he knows a lot of these people who are running these companies a lot better, and I think you know, based on that and all the world leaders who have been coming down and kissing his ring in Mar-a-Lago, I think there will be some drastic change for the positive of the United States. So I'm just watching that and hoping it all works out.
Are you expecting to see some of the people who've been languishing in the federal prison there in Washington, D.C.? Are you expecting to see some commutations of those sentences and getting those people out of prison? I mean, there's a lot of people, I think, that have been unjustly held. Julie Kelly has done a great job of uncovering a lot of that stuff. What are your thoughts on that? Trump has been fairly quiet on that, I think, for good reason. But what are your thoughts on that?
He should absolutely pardon them. What was done to them is a disgrace. When we look back, I mean, I used to cover riots and protests for a living before I really got into the full-on political stuff. But, you know, I used to cover the BLM riots, and, you know, none of those guys are in jail. There was some seriously bad stuff that was going on. Cities were set on fire across the country.
Yeah.
No, none of those people are in prison. And I was also there for January 6th. I was covering the riots outside the Capitol, and I can tell you what those people are going through is not only wrong, but with all the other stuff that's coming out now about informants and, you know, people inside the government possibly egging them on and all these other things, it's pretty disgraceful. So I would say, you know, I think Trump is, like, day one, if not the first month, should probably pardon all of them, get them all out of prison. They, none of those people belong there, honestly. And you're right, Julie Kelly's a friend of mine. She's been the person to cover and to follow on this topic. And if it wasn't for her, I don't think a lot of this would be exposed. So I'm grateful for her, but I think that all of those people, for the most part, deserve to get out of there because it's horrible. And what they're doing to him in D.C. is horrible. What they're doing to Rudy Giuliani in D.C. is horrible. I mean, again, these aren't fair trials. These are juries set up with people who hate you, and then you have a judge who absolutely hates you as well. So, like, none of it matters. It's like, that's why they're all getting appealed, and that's why a lot of them don't really have faith on anything, because it's just so sad. They said, "Oh, we'll bring it to jury. You know, we'll bring it to a jury trial." It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The jury hates me.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But I really hope he does pardon them.
Well, and real quickly, because we've got probably less than a minute left, what's your take on the collapse of mainstream media out of this election? I mean, CNN and MSNBC are pretty much off the radar screen now. What do you think is going to come out of this whole thing on that front?
Well, there's been so many layoffs, I think rightfully so. I mean, I don't want anybody to lose their jobs unless they're spreading fake propaganda to the American people like they have been doing for the last however many years. My advice to Trump's press team, you know, incoming press team, current transition team, would be to give them zero access and cut them out completely. I don't think that they will lose any bit of, I mean, again, he doesn't need to win re-election again, but I don't think it would hurt them at all. There's no need for CNN to have a front row seat in the White House press briefing room anymore. All they'll do is spin things and ask horrible questions that demean the president. What they should do is put people who are going to actually be asking fair questions and who care about the country in the first row. And I would love to see that change happen.
Well, I'm sure part of their strategy is to sit back until they can start ginning up stories about migrant families, you know, illegal immigrant families who are being broken up or, you know, being deported and
it's already happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I don't think people are paying attention to that kind of stuff anymore. Well, listen, Henry, you know, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We'll hopefully get you back on in 2025 to give us an update. And in the meantime, thanks for all your hard work out there. All right.
Thank you so much, Barry. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, and we'll stay in touch. Thanks, guys.
All right. When we return, folks, we'll be talking to Jay, Jake, and Kalen, our multi-generational panel, talking about various different topics of interest. Stay tuned.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.